Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always does, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
He who holds the spice controls the galaxy.
Uh-oh. Dune.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. And we're done.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk about something that's inspired by a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Damon. Damon says, I was just wondering how a plasma cutter works. Is it something to do with electricity? Yours truly, Damon. Damon, that was very nice and short and to the point. So we're going to answer your question.
Yes.
We're going to go into more detail than just the fact that, yes, it does use electricity.
Okay.
So plasma cutters are it's just one use for a plasma torch.
Mm-hmm.
And a plasma torch is a device that uses usually an inert gas, pressurized, pushed through a nozzle, and at the nozzle there's an electrode that's shooting off pretty powerful electricity, which turns the gas into what is called the fourth state of matter, plasma.
Oh, wait, no. Here in my notes it says there are five states of matter: solid, liquid, gas, plasma, and New Hampshire.
Well, there you go. That's the fourth state. See?
Oh, okay.
New
Hampshire, I got it
would
now.
Be the fifth state
I've got
of
it
matter.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. You get to answer that listener mail. That's what you have just earned for yourself,
there
mister.
There is matter in New Hampshire.
Moving on. So plasma. Plasma is an ionized gas. We've talked about it before on this podcast because it does factor into other technologies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it's a gas that has free-roaming electrons, which means that it conducts electricity. It also can, quote-unquote, burn really, really hot.
Yes. As a matter of fact, hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yes. We're talking like 6,000 degrees Celsius. That's pretty toasty.
Yep.
And it turns out this is really, really handy for things like cutting through material, or we're going to get into a really cool application in a minute about how you can use a plasma torch to turn garbage into energy.
Yes.
But let's start. Let's start off slow here.
Okay.
So you're using this ionized gas. It's burning at this really high temperature. It actually breaks stuff down in a process that we call molecular dissociation, which literally means that it starts to break down the molecules because the energy that they absorb is so great the molecular bonds can no longer hold.
Right.
So it comes apart.
Right. Because normally there is a cloud of electrons circling the nucleus of the atom.
Right.
And at that point, the electrons are more loosely bound and sometimes split off.
Right. And you end up with much more basic particles as opposed to molecules. And it doesn't use combustion. So
no.
It's not burning like a traditional torch.
No.
You know, a traditional torch, you need a fuel, you need heat, and you need
air.
Air. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oxygen. And you don't need oxygen for a plasma torch to work.
Right.
And so it's using a it's using heat in a process that we call pyrolysis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now this is when technically, now this is for organic matter. This is not for inorganic matter.
Right. Pyrolysis. That's a different thing entirely.
Right. So pyrolysis is a process in which organic matter breaks down and decomposes. Now, when you apply a plasma torch to organic matter, pyrolysis happens, let's say, on an accelerated basis.
Okay.
Like practically instantaneous, as opposed to taking years and years and years. So this means that plasma torches are very useful for lots of different environments. For example, underwater.
Mm-hmm.
You could use a plasma torch because, again, you're just shooting out gas and you're injecting it with electrons, essentially. So you could use a plasma torch to cut through material underwater and not have to worry about the fact that oxygen, you know, you have a real hard time lighting a traditional torch underwater.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's really good for cutting through pretty much anything. I mean, at that temperature, it's going to manage to make its way through tons and tons of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we do find them very useful in lots of different applications. And the one that I really wanted to talk about, which really it goes beyond the plasma cutters, which, you know, that's interesting enough, but I really wanted to talk about plasma waste converters.
Okay.
Now,
do you want to just jump into that then?
Sure.
Okay, we can.
I mean, unless you had something more to say specifically about plasma cutters.
Well, no, I was going to bring up when we started to learn about them, because it really wasn't even all that long ago World War II that they discovered that this could be possible. Basically, what was going on was, the American war effort required a lot of different kinds of machinery to be fabricated very quickly, and they discovered this arc process that we've been describing, basically by just the techniques they were using then to they started off with arc welding, and they were able to they realized that charging the gas with the current made a barrier around where the weld was, and it protected it from oxidizing, which is very useful, and it also made very, very clean cuts, which is why they're using it for plasma torches, or using plasma torches for cutting purposes. And then in the 1960s, basically what would happen is they realized that once you speed up the flow of gas and cutting down the size of the hole through which it is being released, it would keep higher temperatures than any other type of welder. That's exactly when they started cutting, was because, they discovered the properties of using this method in the welding process. But then once they started experimenting with it some more, found out that it's awesome for cutting, and it can cut through all kinds of different heavy duty metals that you wouldn't be able to cut so finely using any other process, and so simply, really.
Right.
So that's why it's so awesome for that. I just wanted to touch on the history of it a little bit, because this is not something we've known about for a long time, like some of the other technologies we talk about.
Sure, and it's only been a couple of decades since someone thought to apply it to waste management.
Yeah, that's even newer. So
I'm sure you're all aware that waste management is a huge issue. It's a problem in a lot of different communities. We talk about pollution. We talk about the need to create large landfills, mm-hmm. dumping sites. Then, of course, there are the big dumping sites out in the ocean that we don't really like to think about, but they're out there.
Yep.
And we've, you know, people have tried to come up with lots of different ways of solving this problem. Everything from just cutting down the amount of waste we generate, which, you know,
that's part of it.
That's important.
Big part of it.
But we're getting new people every day. And even if you start cutting back the amount of materials you're consuming, the number of people that are added to the planet kind of makes that a very slow process. I mean, eventually it all catches up to you again. So there are other things you can look at, like, you know, the people have tried to burn trash, but of course that often will generate other kinds of pollution.
Yes.
Including pollutants that will eventually cause acid rain in the future. And that's clearly not good either. Mm-hmm. And then there are other, you know, semi-outlandish proposals like shooting it off into space so that we stop polluting the Earth, we'll just start polluting everything else. Now, granted, space is big. I mean, really big.
Well, if you need space for your stuff, there's always space.
At any rate, assuming you don't want to just, you know, find new places to throw stuff away, you want to find a way of getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where plasma waste converters come in. Now, a plasma waste converter has at its heart a plasma torch.
Yeah.
Now, the plasma torch is inside a furnace, and inside that furnace, what you do is you dump garbage in there. Normally, the garbage has to go through a process where it gets crunched up into smaller bits first. But once it goes into the furnace, the plasma torch causes it to transform. And there are two different transformations that happen.
Yes.
To the organic material, you have volatilization, also known as gasification. The organic material gets turned into gases.
Yes, synthetic gases or syngas.
Right. And then you've got the inorganic compounds. So anything that's not carbon-based, essentially, is what you're talking about here.
Yes.
It becomes vitrified. It turns into slag. It kind of looks like lava when it's coming out of a plasma waste converter.
Yeah.
You know, it's that bright reddish-orange glowing liquid material. And as it cools, it becomes, if you were to allow it to air cool, it turns into this kind of hard, glassy, rocky substance. It kind of looks like obsidian.
There's the lava connection again.
Yeah, it looks a lot like obsidian. So if you've ever seen a volcanic rock, that's a lot like what the cooled version of slag from a plasma waste converter looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got the volatilized material and the vitrified material.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, depending on how you cool that slag, it can turn into many different formats. Like air-cooled, it looks like those little rocks, like I was mentioning.
Yes.
If you cool it with water, it turns into these little pebbles. So they don't, like, it doesn't look like little rock, it doesn't look like rocks as in, you know, jagged edges or anything like that. It's almost like a fine sand.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you blow compressed air through it, which I would not recommend anyone try to do if they had somehow managed to build a plasma waste converter, because it's scary to look at.
I was going to say, how many of our listeners do you think actually have a plasma waste converter in their backyard?
You know,
I mean, it's good that you're warning people, find it unlikely.
I will admit, it's a hell of a do-it-yourself project.
Yes, it is.
Okay, but, you know, just saying. No, but anyway, you know, if you were to somehow find a way where you could blow compressed air through the stream of slag as it's coming out of the plasma waste converter, it turns into this very, very thin material. Almost feels kind of like cotton or insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called rock wool. And I actually saw a video of this stuff being made. It's just these two guys standing around, a guy from Georgia Tech, actually, mm-hmm. someone I chatted with quite a bit when I was writing an article about this. The video of him blowing compressed air through this molten stream of material was really impressive and kind of scary, because it's just these two guys standing there blowing compressed air through material that's so hot that it would do you serious harm if you touched it.
Right.
But it turns into rock wool, which turns out to be a really good insulator. And could be a way of making money off plasma waste converters, but we'll talk a little bit more about how they can generate cash. So anyway, you get this, you put the garbage through this stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are the products you get, the syngas and the slag.
Right.
And, you end up reducing the amount of weight and space of that garbage significantly.
One other benefit to using a plasma waste converter to get rid of your stuff is that you can treat all kinds of garbage in there that you might not otherwise want buried in landfills, that because of, you know, it could be dangerous.
Sure.
For example, medical waste. Which could be infectious. Basically, medical waste can be treated in a plasma waste converter, and it, you know, it's inert once it's done because, you know, it breaks materials down to the point where they are no longer what they once were, and, you know, it's no longer dangerous. However, there are limits to how not dangerous things can be. One of the things that you cannot just grab a bucket and throw into the plasma waste converter is spent nuclear rods.
Right.
That is what they call, in scientific terms, bad.
So if you are a do-it-yourselfer and you've built your plasma waste converter in your backyard, not only should you not blow compressed air through the slag, but also please don't put any spent nuclear rods in there.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be responsible.
Okay, then.
So, you know, I mentioned that the weight and the volume are reduced.
Yes.
It's actually reduced by a very significant amount. I mean, granted, a lot of the stuff's being turned into gas.
Yes.
And then a lot of it is being turned into the slag, and the slag is much more dense than the original material, usually, that you put through this. So, in general, the weight of the slag ends up being about 20% of the weight of the original waste you put in there.
Wow.
And the volume is 5%. So, in other words, it takes up much less space. It's very dense. Often the slag, if it's dried so that it becomes the rocky substance, could be used in building materials. So, like concrete or even just using it as, you know, gravel, really. But the neat thing about these plasma waste converters, now there aren't a whole lot of them out there right now. There's only a few. There's a couple in Japan, and there's one that was being built in Florida. I actually haven't looked to see how the progress has gone with that one. It should have been operational by now. But the really cool thing about these is that not only would they eventually be able to take in all the incoming garbage coming into the landfill to process, but some of them operate at such a huge capacity. We're talking thousands of tons of garbage every day.
Right.
That not only could they handle all the incoming garbage, but could actually make a dent in the existing garbage at the landfill.
Why are you going around denting garbage?
I'm just pointing out that if we were to invest in this technology, eventually we could reclaim landfills. You could actually end up using them enough so that the landfill is gone because you've consumed all the garbage in there. Now, granted, you'd still be getting incoming garbage, so it's not like you could just shut down. You know, you wouldn't. These aren't facilities that you start up and then like 20 years later they're insignificant or obsolete. No, you would still be taking incoming garbage in and still gasifying or vitrifying it. Mm-hmm. But you could reclaim all those landfills.
That's pretty impressive, really.
Considering that, you know,
all things considered.
Yeah. I mean, think about all the different communities that really fight to prevent landfills from moving in. It would be a good way to reclaim all that land, use it for something else once it's cleaned. And one of the really cool ideas I saw was if building a whole plasma waste center is too much money, you could always make a portable version.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this one's kind of scary. So here's the portable idea. The portable idea is that you go to a landfill, you drill down into the landfill, you insert into the hole a plasma torch on the end of a very long pole. You cap the hole at the top with a chamber that can capture escaping gases, and you light that sucker up.
Seriously.
Yeah. The landfill itself becomes the furnace for the plasma waste converter. Instead of building a furnace around the torch, the landfill itself acts as a furnace. And again, since you're not using combustion, you don't set fire to everything. There's no oxygen down there, or at least not enough to actually create a fire. You're consuming the landfill from the inside out.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was possible.
Yeah.
And
I don't know that anyone's actually done it yet, but I saw a really cool presentation of it at Georgia Tech.
Well, I would also assume that since plasma cutters are available for people to buy, that this is something you really wouldn't want to try, that you theoretically could possibly do, you know, try to burn your own garbage.
This would be a supremely bad idea, and I'll tell you exactly why it's a bad idea.
Okay.
Beside the fact that you would possibly maim and or kill yourself.
Yes.
The gas that's given off, the organic gas.
Mm-hmm. The syngas?
Is not necessarily harmless.
Oh.
Now, we talked about how the materials get broken down into very inert forms.
Mm-hmm.
That mainly pertains to the slag. All right. So when the slag comes out, one of the big concerns about plasma waste converters is there's a lot of stuff that's in garbage. I mean, there's mercury, there's lead, there's all these materials that eventually, you know, that you only break them down so far, right?
Right.
It's not like you can change the atoms. Well, there was a worry that maybe the slag, the stuff could leach out of the slag, get into the groundwater, and then you really just traded one problem for another really serious problem.
Sure.
It looks like the material doesn't leach out anything, so that concern is gone. But stuff that turns into a gas that is toxic, that remains.
Uh-huh.
And it's only through a process of scrubbing that gas by putting it through a series of filters mm-hmm. that you start taking out the harmful elements that could otherwise, cause serious damage and or kill people.
Right. But it's mainly hydrogen and carbon monoxide given off, but there's other stuff that can be
exactly
in it as well, is what you're saying.
And carbon monoxide's not the healthiest stuff in the world either. But
granted,
a little whiff of it's not going to instantaneously kill you, but yes, it is toxic. That's why if you look at a full plasma waste converter system, there is after you've burned everything, there's still more to the system besides that. You usually have at the front of the system, you've got a conveyor belt, carries the garbage to some grinders, which grind it down into tiny bits. The tiny bits go into the furnace. The furnace burns that stuff up, or melts it, I guess is a better way of putting it, gasifies it. The gas goes into one part of the system, and the slag gets drained off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the gas usually will go through a cleaning system, like I mentioned, where it'll go through usually a spray of water, which helps cool it down, because this gas is incredibly hot after coming out of the furnace. And then it goes through, it also scrubs the gas out of some pollutants and some particulates that are usually included in the gas. And then it will go through a filter that has base in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the gas can have acidic elements in it. And, of course, when you mix an acid with a base, what do you get?
pH is 7. What is that?
All right, it's neutral, but the more important thing is you get a salt.
Oh, right.
Base plus acid equals salt.
Great.
That's okay. That's okay.
That's embarrassing.
Only reason I know it is because it's in the paragraph right in front of me. I forgot that. It's been a long time since I've had high school chemistry.
Yeah.
But yes.
Stuff from the science lab.
Now, all of our listeners, of course, were screaming it out.
I know. They were. They were.
95% of them are in high school chemistry right now. Hey, guys. How's it going? Anyway, so, yeah, you get a neutral salt as a result. And it goes through this cleaning process. It's usually several steps so that you end up with a synthetic gas that can actually be used as a fuel. So now we're getting to why or how a plasma waste converter can be profitable.
Right.
Because we know that environmentally, this sounds like a fantastic idea. I mean, you get rid of all this garbage. You end up with some synthetic gas that can be used as a fuel. You end up with some slag that's inert. It sounds like a dream come true, right?
Well, sort of.
More or less. I mean, better than a bunch of big pile of garbage sitting out back, right?
Right.
So,
absolutely.
But we know that the world revolves around making cash.
Yes.
Money. Pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, dollar bills, $100 bills. I bet no one got that reference. Anyway, so
it is all about the Benjamins.
It is all about. There you go. They'll get that reference.
Yeah.
So anyway, the way that they can make cash is that, one, there's this thing called tipping fees.
Yes.
Now, tipping fees refer to the amount of money or the money that people have to pay in order to be able to cart garbage to a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, right now, waste management's kind of almost a monopoly. So the landfills can pretty much dictate the tipping fees. There's no real competition there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no incentive to lower tipping fees. Populations are growing and consumption continues to grow. So really, these fees are getting higher and higher. It's getting more and more expensive to just pay to have garbage shipped to landfills.
Mm-hmm.
With plasma waste converters, you're not worried about running out of space anymore. In fact, you're making space. So the tipping fees could be negotiated to a lower level.
I'm sure that would make the waste management companies really happy.
Yeah, when it comes down to making money,
stop making money.
It's also really hard for them to justify protesting. Because protesting the fact that, hey, we're saving the world, but we're not making as much money doesn't get you a lot of sympathy, as it turns out. But anyway, so they could negotiate tipping fees, and tipping fees would be part of how they would make money. They could also sell the slag, mm-hmm. however, in whatever format, whether it was being used as a gravel or a building material, or if they were making rock wool, they could sell it like insulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's apparently extremely effective as insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the gas, they could actually generate enough gas from destroying this garbage to create fuel to run the facility itself. So in that sense, they don't need to consume power from the power grid. And in fact, they could potentially create enough gas to sell power back to the power grid.
Well, that would be nice.
Because you would generate this gas, you could run a generator and then generate electricity and add it to the power grid. A lot of people have asked me in the past, does this mean that it's some sort of magical kind of way of generating energy? Because you think about that, it sounds like, how can something generate more energy than it takes to run it?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that is it's using fuel. All it's doing is converting fuel from one format into another. It's not like a perpetual motion machine. It's kind of like the idea of, well, if an oil drill consumed more energy than it generated by gathering fuel, it would make no sense to drill for oil, right?
Yeah.
Because what
you'd
have to pour more energy into the drill than you would get out of the fuel you were.
Right.
It's the same sort of thing. Think of it like an oil drill. It's not like a perpetual motion machine. It's more like an oil drill because you're gathering fuel up from garbage.
Right.
So, that's the way that they could make money. Now, getting the initial investment to build one of these things has been tricky because they are expensive.
How could that possibly be so?
Yeah, well, mostly because they're all customized.
Well, yeah, that's true. One of the things in the article on plasma waste converters is the fact that every single plant that there is in existence now is custom. So
yeah.
It's all unique.
Yeah, and it turns out designing a facility from the ground up costs lots of money.
It does seem pricey, yes.
Yeah. And
although I'm sure you could get some really nice parts with clean edges if you use plasma cutters.
Well, and it's also a matter of educating the communities about what the plasma waste converter is doing, the benefits of it, and any potential drawbacks, because you have to be completely upfront about that. I mean, otherwise people are going to worry about it. I mean, let's put it this way. If you were told, like, if you had no knowledge of plasma waste converters at all,
right,
and you were told, hey, I want to build this facility that at its heart is going to have a torch that burns hotter than the surface of the sun, it's going to give off gas which could potentially kill you, and a molten slag, we're just going to throw your garbage in there. Are you all right with that? You might have a little pause first.
Sure thing, Chief.
Right. I mean, unless you just had lots of garbage and you're like, dude, anything to get rid of this stuff, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it's a little intimidating at first, too. It takes a little time to understand this. But just to give one last little bit kind of statistics.
Please do.
This is what Chuck would do if he were here.
Ah.
He's the statistic guy. The proposed facility in Florida is supposed to be in St. Lucie County. Like I said, mm-hmm. I hadn't looked to see. I should have checked to see if they had built it and should be up and running by now.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was that it would be able to process up to 1,000 tons of garbage each day and generate 67 megawatt hours of power each day, with a net output of 33 megawatt hours, because, of course, it has to consume some to keep going. And that it could eventually scale up to 3,000 tons of waste per day by adding a couple of modular units to the already existing ones. And that potentially it would be able to completely eliminate the landfill in less than 2 decades.
Wow.
And it could power 98,000 homes.
Seriously, wow.
Yeah, just from garbage. So that's pretty cool, I think.
Okay, so our sister site, Treehugger,
yep,
says that the plant in St. Lucie County, Florida, is expected to be online by 2011.
Oh, cool.
So not in the too distant future, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, I look forward to reading more about that, because I find the whole model to be fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
And potentially a real game changer.
But you definitely don't want to be right next to it.
Well, I definitely don't want to be in the furnace.
No,
I know that.
No.
Wouldn't be in there for very long.
Yeah, I just wonder. I imagine you'd probably have to stay pretty far away from it. I'm sure they have insulation, but
yeah,
still.
Actually, they are very heavily insulated. They have water cooling systems that run through, because you think about that. Like, if it burns hotter than the surface of the sun, what the heck could withstand that kind of heat?
You know, just sort of a trivia fact, really, but something that was in the article I don't think you mentioned, the slag, which isn't immediately drained off, can actually help continue to heat the furnace.
Yes.
Which is also pretty neat, because once it's converted, it's already producing energy, heat energy, and it's maintaining it, I guess.
Right. And actually the heat itself can be recaptured and used to generate it ends up converting water into steam, which then turns turbines, which generates energy, electricity specifically. And
it's fascinating.
So yeah, there are a lot of different ways that you could create electricity using this system, all by just, you know, getting rid of some garbage.
And we don't have too much of that running around. Anyway.
We try to trim it from this podcast whenever possible.
So that's why I've been missing from the last six. Anyway.
Well, we've done plasma cutters. We talked about plasma waste converters.
Yes,
I want to move on to a second round of listener mail. Now, this listener mail specifically comes from Brian, although we received other people asking the same question, including Dante, so I wanted to give a shout-out to both of them. The question is, you spoke a lot about how listening to music with earbuds can lead to hearing loss if volume is too high, but what about listening to speech, like the Tech Stuff podcast? Oh, well, I may lose hearing, but I'll gain smarts, Brian. Yes, Brian, any loud noise, especially a sustained loud noise, even if there are short breaks, like in speech, if you listen to it over a stretch of time, like, for instance, a typical Tech Stuff podcast, you can cause hearing damage.
Yes.
Does not have to be music. Does not have to be AC/DC.
Does not have to be a jackhammer or a jet engine.
Yeah.
Loud noise, bad for ears.
Right. Right. So just in general, just try and keep those ears safe, okay? And if any of you have any questions, comments, you have a topic you want to suggest, you just want to say hello, you can write us. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedena. And we're excited to be back, having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.